All right. One of the things I do in my IT business is I do public service announcements to make people aware of scams and other things that are going around. And unfortunately, in 2025, you have to be careful buying things from old people online. I know that seems weird, but meet Grace. Grace, if you watch the videos or you see her website, she is a wonderful master leather worker. But she's getting older and she wants to settle down, and she's got this huge backlog of beautiful heirloom leather bags for sale. And she'll make you a great deal on her website as she has a going out of business sale. The only problem is that's not a real person. Grace is an AI generated image. And I know some of you haven't really seen what AI can do. You hear about it in the news. But somebody put into a prompt on a website a few different descriptions. They say, I would like a woman at around this age, of this ethnicity, that's a leather worker. And then the computer just made that. So believe it or not, that's not a real person. That's a completely fabricated thing. And if you were to go to Grace's website and buy one of her bags, you would get the opportunity to spend $250 on a bag that comes from China, and it's not leather, it's going to be pleather or that fake vinyl stuff. It's gonna have a little cheap sewn-in tag that says made in China. And if you went to Alibaba or one of the other Chinese websites, you would find that they purchased it for 99 cents. That would be frustrating. But there are so many of these. There are watches for sale. There are boxes for sale. There are all of these things. It's kind of the new big thing. But it got me thinking a little bit. You see, one of the reasons why they would use a picture of Grace or somebody's grandfather is that there is an inherent trust that we have in older generations. And for the most part, because they've deserved it. Because over the years, there's been a life of faithfulness and effort, and we've been able to see that. We've seen the legacy that they've left. But unfortunately, that legacy can be forgotten. I want to ask you today, can you recall the name of your great-grandfather? I hope so. How about your great-great-grandfather? Do you know what they did for a living? Do you know what their story of faith was when they came to Christ, if they came to Christ? There's this thing that happens as generations pass that we forget. We're most important to those that are closest to us. And as we forget, we get into this issue of if we forget the past, we're doomed to what? Repeat it. The other thing that I think I remember in these things is that history may not repeat, but it sure does rhyme. That we go through things and we start to throw our hands in the air. If you watch cable news, that somehow the world is falling apart and it's never been this bad before, but history is so cyclical that there are lessons from the past and there are legacies of faith if we only understood it. But if you feel some lament that you don't understand or remember what happened before, or maybe you look out and you're frustrated, you know what? It stinks that my grandkids or my great-grandkids don't go to church. My kids don't go to church. That they were raised that way, that you tried to set that legacy up. The reality is we are entering a time period where as long as we've been recording it, and in fairness, we haven't been recording or keeping track that long, but as long as we have been, this is the first generation kids born today that many of which are expected to go into adulthood with almost zero exposure to church. You may not have had, you know, kids may not have gone to church in previous generations, but they were usually invited to a vacation Bible school, to a church event, to an Easter egg hunt, to a youth group outing. But the numbers have gone down to where we're expected. And we'll see. I think God has something to say about this, and so do his people. But we're expected to be going into a time period where they would call us a post-Christian nation, one that looks far more like Europe does today, where churches are filled with faithful believers, but they're not exactly filled. And that can be a scary thought. Does that mean the sky is falling, that, like Chicken Little said, that everything is doomed? It doesn't, because God is still at work in Europe. He's still at work in different areas, at different parts of this cycle, but this cycle is not new. And as we look to the book of Judges, we realize that God and his people have this relationship, this cycle, where we get comfortable and we forget. And then crisis happens, and we cry out to God, and we remember again. So as we introduce the book of Judges, we have to understand that this is a generation we're talking about in the book of Judges that forgot. They forgot God's faithfulness. They forgot what God had done for their ancestors who were brought out of Egypt. They forgot about the Exodus. They forgot about all of the promises and blessings and the tabernacle and the tent of meeting. All of that they forgot. And in their forgetting, in their lack of understanding, they went out and they followed false gods and they followed the flesh. And they walked away from God's blessing. Like we said before, we had the story of Joshua, and Joshua followed the example of Moses, but then after Joshua dies, after that generation dies, we pick up in Judges chapter 2, and we'll start in verse 10. After that whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors, after they died and went to heaven, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what had happened for Israel. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. Those are false gods. Evil, wicked, idol-worshipping practices. They forsook the Lord, the God of their ancestors who had brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshiped various gods of the people around them. They aroused the Lord's anger because they forsook him and served Baal and the Asherahs, another very phallic, long poles that went in the air, form of fertility worship. In his anger against Israel, the Lord gave them into the hands of raiders who plundered them. He sold them into the hands of their enemies all around, whom were no longer able to resist. Whenever Israel went out to fight, the hand of the Lord was against them to defeat them, just as he had sworn to them. They were in great distress. Then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hands of these raiders. Yet they would not listen to their judges, but prostituted themselves to other gods and worshiped them. They quickly turned from the ways of their ancestors who had been obedient to the Lord's commands. Whenever the Lord raised up a judge for them, he was with the judge and saved them out of the hands of their enemies as long as the judge lived, for the Lord relented because of their groaning under those who oppressed and afflicted them. But when the judge died, the people returned to the ways even more corrupt than those of their ancestors, following other gods and serving and worshiping them. They refused to give up their evil practices and stubborn ways. So we have this long period of history. I mean, we're seeing that God raised up a judge, and then God was with the people for the life of that judge. And when that judge died, the people would return to their sinful ways, and you'd have generations living in debauchery. We're talking about bad stuff because the neighbors of Israel, that in their worship to idols, it wasn't just light a candle and say a prayer. It was child sacrifice. It was infanticide. It was It was sexual practices, orgies, all sorts of crazy stuff that would make us blush or be angry today. But this is what happened. And then God would say, I'm removing my blessing and my protection. And the neighboring nations who have long been jealous of the privileges that God gave, the wealth, the place of influence, and they would come in and they would ransack Israel. They would take slaves. They would capture them. They would steal their gold. And then in the groaning of that oppression and slavery, God's people would cry out, and he would raise up a judge. They wouldn't even cry out to God. They would cry out in their pain, and God in his love and his mercy would raise up a judge who would help them return and repent, and God would deliver them. And for the life of that judge, things would go well until rinse and repeat, it happens again. It's this long, just back and forth. It reminds you a little bit of the people of Israel in the Exodus. They're under the slavery of Egypt and they're groaning. They're forgetting their old ways, and God raises up Moses. But this period of the judges, it was quite long. We see this cycle. And the first thing that I want us to focus on this morning is that forgetting leads to forsaking. When a generation doesn't recall God's faithfulness, they give their devotion to idols and indulge the flesh. The verse here is, they forsook the Lord, the God of their ancestors, who brought them out of Egypt. One of the things that I think we are learning it, and we know it, but maybe a generation or two past, we assumed it was enough. But it doesn't matter that God is the God of our ancestors. He has to become our God too. It's not good enough that we are a Christian family. We have to lead and shepherd our children into opportunities where they themselves can choose to follow Christ. We make assumptions that if we take them to church, that if they go to Sunday school, that if they memorize some verses, that that will be enough. And there are times as parents, and maybe I'm wired more this way than the rest of my family, where it's like, I don't care what happens, I want to see it at church on Sunday morning. And that pressure maybe pushes them away more than helps them make their faith their own. But at the end of the day, over and over in these first two chapters of the book of Judges, there's this language of how God was the God of their ancestors. He wasn't their God. And for a gap to break down, that's the first thing that happens, is that God isn't my God. I haven't made it personal. I haven't made it my own. It's more of a family tradition. Beth and I watched a movie that was Oscar winner, I think. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. It's a story of two young men that go to Poland on a Holocaust trip to honor their grandmother, who was a Holocaust survivor. And, I mean, those things all make it kind of Oscar bait material. But all the good parts were in the trailer, and the language was rough. So I'm not recommending it. But one of the things that they address in that film is that there is one of these brothers who's like, yes, I'm Jewish, but I'm not religious. I'm Jewish, but I'm an atheist. And there's this weird thing about Judaism. I'm not trying to make fun of or be difficult with Jews, because we as Christians do the same thing, where we separate out our faith and it becomes the faith of our ancestors. It becomes a part of our heritage and our lineage, but we don't believe it. It becomes our cultural identity, but not something that we practice and that we live out. And as one generation does that, then the next generation is worse. There's this saying that we have as pastors that if it's a haze in the pulpit, it's a fog in the pew. If I don't really understand what I'm up here talking about, then you have no chance of understanding what I don't understand as I'm sharing it. And that's what happened from generation to generation, is it was like, well, yeah, that's what my parents did. That's part of my cultural identity, but it's not mine. And they forgot. And forgetting leads to forsaking. Because if we don't keep our eyes fixed on the God of creation, if we don't remember what he's called us to do, then as we go through difficult and character-building experiences, we will choose the path of least resistance. We will look around and we will do what everyone else does because we don't want to feel the pain. And put yourself for a minute. If you were creating your own creation, I used to play a game called The Sims. Some of you are a little older, you probably don't realize or know what that is, but it's a game where you have this little person and you have to like get him a job and you have all these little indicators to kind of keep him happy. So he has to have enough money, he has to have enough social interaction, he has to have enough intellectual stimulation. There's all these little bars and categories, and you walk around and you build him a house and he needs to have enough space and all of that. But you're trying to keep his way balanced. And if you want to do well in that game, it's pretty easy, but it's counterintuitive. You make sure that the only fun that he has is fun that builds skills. So he doesn't have a TV, he does art. And the more and more he does art, the better he gets, and he can start selling that art, and he builds skill. So you're doing a few things with one stone. He learns these skills, and you're developing. But if we were to create our own little person as a project, we're not going to put him in front of the TV to veg out, are we? We're going to try and put challenge in front of them so that they grow and they become, because at the end of that, we want something more than just a comfortable creature. And for God and us, it's the same thing. God is calling us to serve him in a beautiful kingdom and do great things, all of us. But to do that, he will make you uncomfortable. He will make you have to wait and be patient. For those that have walked with God long enough, you know that God is never early, but he's always on time. Beth and I spent some time reflecting the arc that God has had in our life. And the reality is, the past year, we went through the 9 months of court and everything with Anna's difficulty. We didn't know if we were going to be disqualified from ministry forever. If the lie that was told continued, we may never be in the pulpit again. We may never pastor another church. And you look at those things, and again, God came through in just the right time. We've learned how miraculous it was that he provided what we needed in the moment. But we're not alone in that. All of us, if we watch and look back, it's really hard when we're here looking forward. But when we look backwards, we can see God weaving this tapestry even through the difficult things that built us and prepared us for the next step. We all wish that we were ready to be thrust out onto the stage into greatness right away, but those who experience that usually fail and fall. And I think you need no example of that beyond the lottery. You think, well, money isn't inherently evil. Giving somebody money shouldn't just wreck their lives. But like the vast majority of the time, when you take someone who's not prepared for it and you thrust them into the spotlight and into wealth, it destroys their life. There are so many testimonials from lottery winner after lottery winner that says, point blank, this ruined my life. Hard things are important to prepare us step by step for the stage that God has prepared. We forget that Moses was out tending sheep for 80 years before he ended up being ready to lead the people through the Exodus. Abraham waited so long before he had the child promise. Jesus even spent 30-some years preparing for 3 years of ministry. And today, us pastoral candidates want to spend 3 years of preparation for 30 years of ministry. God will use difficult and challenging things. And if we don't have our eyes fixed on him, if we don't remember him, if he is just the God of our ancestors, then we begin to look around. And the people of Israel, they began to look around and they said, you know what? It's not raining on my crops, but it's raining on theirs. And they do some weird sexual stuff in worship to Asherah, the fertility god, and it rains on their, at least it did last week. So they begin to look around and they say, maybe we should give that a try. Even worse yet, they begin to marry into these other nations and families. And maybe the son of the tribe of Judah marries into an Amorite or another neighboring nation. And the wife says, well, you know what? Back in my hometown, if we worship to this idol, God would give us a child. And right now we're not having children. We don't understand why. It's painful. You see where I'm getting at? It wasn't like they just switched one for the other, but they forgot. And forgetting led them to forsake as they saw others prosper, as they saw good things happen to those around them, and they wanted the blessing of at least a God. And they forsook the Lord, the God of their ancestors who brought them out of Egypt, and they went on to worship all of the other gods, and they looked just like all the other nations, and they walked outside of the promise that God gave them, because he said, I want you to be my example. I want you to understand what I'm doing, and it's through you that I will bless you, and you will bless the world. They were never meant to be by themselves. They were meant to be raised up by God, to be salt and light, to be a city on a hill, so that they could then go and bless the nations around them. They were the ones who were supposed to be the influencers to say, don't worship that silly piece of stone. The prophet Isaiah said, with one log, you craft your God. With the rest of it, you cook your food and you warm your house. It's the same piece of wood. God's plan was for them to be the example and the blessing and the light. And instead, they forgot. And then they forsake. And forsaking leads to slavery. Turning away from God doesn't lead them to freedom. Saying, I don't want to follow those rules anymore. Those rules feel restrictive. The Ten Commandments, the laws of God about what not to eat. That I'd rather eat the blood of that animal and get sick and all those things. I mean, they said they were looking for freedom outside of God's restrictions, but that freedom they were looking after was false. It wasn't real, because turning away from God doesn't lead to freedom. It leads to slavery under a lesser master. We will all serve someone. All of us will. We can either serve God, a master who is merciful and good, or we can serve our flesh, a master that is unforgiving. We can serve the devil, a master that is unforgiving and harsh. We can serve the world, we can serve these idols, but there is no freedom in it. You've all seen people do this. Billy Graham used to talk about how we all had a God-shaped hole inside of us. And they try and fill that hole with drugs or with money or with sex or with, you name it, work, career, prestige, pride. We try. We've gotten so good as a species of trying to fill that so that we can be our own master. And at the end of the day, we are even more a slave than when we began. Forsaking leads to slavery. In his anger against Israel, the Lord gave them into the hands of raiders who plundered them. God's hand of protection went down, just as he had promised. And don't think that God here is being capricious for a moment. He's not being quick. He was so patient. So patient. Have you guys ever like walked into the backyard and accidentally stepped on an anthill? And you step on that anthill and those ants don't like, they're not happy about it, and they come up and they start biting you. What do you usually do when that happens? When this little creature and these things, they in one moment inconvenience you. If you're anything like me, you go to the garage and you get a whole bunch of poison and you kill every last one of them. Because they inconvenience you for a moment. They cause you a little bit of pain. The people of Israel had caused their God so much heartache. And yet, he is not quick to wipe them out. He said, after Noah and the ark, I'm not doing that again. He's patient. And even though forsaking led to slavery, God is merciful to rise up judge after judge to give them a new opportunity for a new generation to return to him. You don't want me to be God for a day. And I really don't want you to be God for a day. We wouldn't do a very good job. But God, in his mercy, he restores. So forsaking leads to slavery. We're going to serve someone. And the people of Israel, they look just like the other nations. They opened the door for those nations that had been restrained, that had been held back, that had been afraid. This is the beauty of when Israel was following after God, when Moses or Joshua, or even later one of the judges is raised up to follow them. The Ark of the Covenant was a fearful, scary thing. In fact, to this day, we've talked about this. If you watch the History Channel, which is the funniest name for a channel that only talks about aliens, as far as I'm concerned. If I ever turn on in a hotel room the History Channel, it's aliens again, which I've never seen happen in history. But if you look at that, we talked about this in the messages on the tabernacle, the writing of other nations about the Ark of the Covenant and how much they feared it, that these alien folks, they're convinced this was some kind of nuclear reactor. That's how powerful it was and how fearful the other nations were, because God would take a small army and they would defeat much larger ones. When God was with them, they could do the impossible. But when they turned their backs on God, when they chose to be enslaved by false, idolatrous gods, God simply stepped back. And like a vacuum, all those other nations came in to pay back the defeats that they had received at the hands of Israel. And finally, slavery leads to tears and God's mercy. Even in judgment, God's heart turns to mercy, and he raises up an imperfect leader to deliver Israel. Over and over and over again. Some of you will say, well, Pastor Jeff, I've heard the name Judges, but I don't know who any of the judges are. Yeah, you do. Samson, Gideon. You've heard these names. There are so many others. Next week, we'll talk about Deborah. Maybe one you haven't heard of. Unless you're Pastor Jerry. I'm sure he knows them all. But even in God's judgment, God's heart turns to mercy, and he raises up an imperfect leader to deliver Israel. The scripture says, then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hands of these raiders. It's important to realize, though, that they weren't crying out to God. This wasn't the passages that we so typically quote, that if my people will hear my voice and be humbled and will pray to me, that I will come and I will heal their land. I will forgive them and heal their land. That's not what's happening here, because they forgot. There was no one who remembered. They were crying tears of pain. But they weren't necessarily crying out to God. And we have to be careful with absolutes. I'm not trying to say that no one ever cried out, that no one ever remembered. But the people were crying out in their pain. And there's something about the book of Revelation that stood out to me so much. And that is that there are two things of ours that God collects and he keeps and he finds precious. One of them is our prayers that are like incense. The others is our tears. Our tears are this precious commodity, not in a sadistic way, but they're precious to God because he loves us. And the people of God, well, the people of God that are not living like the people of God, the people of Israel, they cry out and God hears them. And his mercy, it's undeserved. He takes away the punishment that they should receive and he raises up a judge, and that judge turns the heart of the people, and he does it in unconventional and strange ways. Remember Gideon, he doesn't raise up an army, he raised up a marching band. But God said, trust me, because you're going to see that I'm the one who brings the victory. The Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hands of these raiders. So there's this cycle. And I wish it just ended here. I do. I wish for the people of Israel in the time of the judges. I wish for us today that it just ended here, that it was like a hockey stick on the graph and faithfulness just shot out from here. But what happens is that we receive the victory, we live it out, we fail to teach the next generation, we fail to model to the next generation, and comfort takes over. Strong people, hard people, you've heard this before, hard times make strong people, and strong people make soft times, and soft times make soft people, and soft people make hard times. That's the cycle of history. It goes on and on. And it's so prevalent here in the book of Judges. The people forget, and they forsake, and they fall, and God brings freedom, and then they forget, they forsake, they fall, and God brings freedom. And it's really easy for us to be hard on the Israelites, isn't it? Because that's them, and that was then. But if we're honest with ourselves, we live out this cycle in our own life from season to season. And we see this cycle in our families and in our history, generation to generation. I mean, look at us. You see it in the church. At one point, this church was filled with families. Many of them still live around here. But for some reason, that generation was broken. And one generation, and I'm not blaming, I think it's all around. Remember, we're no perfect people allowed here. We all have some place in it. But things got comfortable and we forgot. And then there was forsaking, and then there was fall, and then we cry out and there's freedom again. So my question is, where are you in this cycle? Because as we go through the book of Judges, as we work through this, you're going to see different opportunities depending on where you are to get where you need to go. Are you in a place where you've forgotten, and that's beginning, and now you're beginning to forsake? If so, all you have to do is repent and come back to the Lord. You don't have to go all the way around that circle. Are you in a place where everything seems to be being torn down around you, where it feels like God's hand of protection and provision has been withdrawn? You can find freedom by crying out to God and saying, God, forgive me. And maybe the forgetting is just starting. And it's time to turn our hearts around and remember. No matter where you are, confession, repentance, and returning to God, it's a lot easier than you think. Ella, would you come up and close us in the final song?